the Generative Art Podcast. We're absolutely delighted to have Matt Delorier join us for this episode.
All right, here we go. Yeah. How's everybody doing?
Hey.
I am. It's Tim. How are you?
Fantastic. We've got a fantastic guest here. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Matt Delorier. I'm a creative coder and an artist living in London.
Delorier.
I'm
you heard
it
here first.
Delorier.
You hear?
Yeah. It's funny. I'm so it's glad like so many times people get that wrong.
Yeah. Me and Tim do it for everybody, regardless of whether it's hard to pronounce or not.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure
we have put it wrong in a previous episode, but we're going to re-edit that and cut you saying it as me.
It's actually French, so it's supposed to be Delorier, but that's even harder, so I just say the Americanized version.
Remember that one, Tim. Whenever we mention Matt in future episodes, that's for you.
Oh, I'll be correcting them with the French.
Yeah. What do you do, Matt?
So I do a mix of things. Right now I'm teaching at UCL in London. It's a university, and I'm teaching with Jessica In, and she's my teaching partner. She's sort of running most of the show. And we're teaching creative coding and design for exhibition and performance. It's a master's program. And aside from that, I'm doing a lot of other stuff, doing some art on the side, doing lots of open source tools, doing some client work for web products like WebGL, that kind of stuff. It's a whole mixed bag of things, yeah.
Yeah, how are you? Is this your first teaching gig, just out of interest? I teach, so this is quite interesting. We're going to go slightly
off
topic.
This is pretty new for me. Before this, I've been doing like different workshops at conferences and a few other places. And then last year, just the end of last year, I started teaching at UCL as a skills tutor for their creative coding, like the first term students in the master's program. And it was a whole new thing for me to do, like teaching week to week, just like really long days. It was like, 10 to 5 or something, 2 days a week. And you need a lot more material than just for one day workshop. So it was a whole new thing, but it's sort of stuck and I'm still going.
That's really good. I mean, I enjoy it. What I tend to find is it is exhausting, like the full day. And then you have another full day and you have another full day. And when you're doing workshops, you can sort of go in and you end and that's it. And I feel like when I'm teaching, it's ever so much more draining. But it's very fulfilling. I find it one of the most
super rewarding. And it's really amazing to see what the students are coming up with too. Like just after even a couple of weeks, they kind of run with the stuff you give them and you teach them, and they end up coming up with these like amazing things, and they're like spending their evenings sometimes like trying to get it working, and they're really excited and passionate. So super cool, really fun. I think I'll be continuing to teach in this kind of capacity for a long time if I can.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
How did you get into that out of curiosity? Like the course creation and everything.
Yeah, it was just sort of stumbling into it. It started all with workshops, and over time, I guess I kept building out these workshops, just like more and more resources. And I started writing guides for the workshops and like making little tools for the workshops. And I spent just like tons of times like prepping these workshops. And I guess somehow my name got passed into UCL, and I knew Jessica's work. She's doing a lot of like really, really cool creative coding stuff on Instagram. Her handle is She Draws With Code. So definitely worth checking out her stuff. We just got connected somehow in London. And she asked me if I wanted to start teaching the skills course at UCL. And so I just used sort of to start with, I used the workshops and the material that I had set up there, but that was obviously not enough for like a full term of creative coding, so I had to just build that out. And it was like you said, Ruth, it was just like every day I was just crunching, and then the next day we'd be teaching, and then I'd be like, oh my god, I need more material. But but in the end, it was, yeah, it all worked out really well. Yeah.
That's really
cool.
Kind
of does go to show how much we, oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. You go.
I was just going to say, it goes to show kind of in a scary way how much we just sit and consume, especially when you're trying to learn something online. It's like, I don't really put together how many hours of, you know, material I'm consuming from 8 different people or 10 different people or 100 different people over any given week. But suddenly, when you're the only person kind of creating it, it's a little scary how much everyone can just eat up what you've got.
Yeah. And I also think there's something to, like, being a new teacher in this kind of space, it should go a little bit slower than a workshop, whereas I find the workshop setting, it's kind of fast paced, and you already have, like, you have people that are very specific into what they want, and you kind of have, like, a very clear plan of how the day is going to go. And at least for me, I don't like to have too many, you know, long, like, open periods where it's just like a 2-hour them trying to solve problems, because when I go to workshops, it's kind of like I want to cram in as much as I can. Whereas in a more school, like typical school setting, you can have those moments where they just are doing an exercise on their own for a long period of time, and you're just going around and sort of helping them out one-on-one. And that's something that I think it took me like a couple sessions before I started thinking, okay, I got to slow down a bit. Can't just cram everything into every single day. You got to have a lot of time for them to just breathe and sort of absorb all that knowledge.
Yeah, I definitely find that. I still, that's a really good thing for you to say, because I've just revised the course that I teach. I do 2 weeks on a boot camp every 3 months, and I cram so much in and I still haven't learned, because we do a lot of exercises, and I'm hoping that the revisions have given me that space, because you're right, they really like that. Just wandering around while they're doing stuff and getting to ask you questions, which I guess when you're doing workshops, they're already coming with a skill level anyway, a lot of time in workshops. So they just want to take that information away, and then they'll spend their own time on it, which you don't necessarily think about when you're actually doing like a class or a course or something like that. So yeah, because you've been creative coding for a while, haven't you?
Yeah.
You learnt in Canada, in Vancouver,
yeah, so
was it? Did you agree?
I sort of pinpoint it whenever I do like talks and stuff, and whenever I try and summarize how I got into this, I pinpoint it back to like 2014 was when I sort of got the spark of it, and I started doing like a web demo with JavaScript and with Canvas, and that's where I started to be like, oh wow, this is what I want to really do. But before that, mm-hmm. I was just learning code on the side, and I was doing a lot of, I started in high school with Java, which was a horrible experience. and I was using Java to program games and graphics with just raw OpenGL, basically, with LWJGL or something like that. It's some OpenGL wrapper for Java. And it's just the most excruciating way of doing anything creative or graphical. And at the time, I just that's all I knew, is like you just set up like thousands of lines of draw calls to make any sort of graphic on the screen. But then, yeah, once I fell into JavaScript and Canvas and web demos, it's like a whole new world opened up.
I feel like that's like baptism by fire. Do you find it's doing it with JavaScript now, which is your chosen medium most of the time, do you find it gives you more creative space because it's, you know, looser? And to me, I feel like it's calmer a lot.
Yeah, I would say definitely. Like, it's, there's something about the looseness, like you're saying. It's, you can kind of mess up and it still works. And also, you can kind of, sometimes you can just like really hack things together in a way that if you showed your code to another programmer from a different language, they might be reeling. But at the end of the day, a lot of creative coding is just to make something expressive, and it's not to make something that the code is perfect. And so it doesn't really matter if it's like really hacky. The feedback cycle of JavaScript is crazy fast compared to a lot of other languages. Yeah, and when I show people that are used to maybe, I don't know, C++ or C#. When I show people my workflow with some of my own tools and how like fast it is just to tweak your code, they're just like, whoa, that's, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was discussing this. I've got a desk in an office where they do a lot of 3D work, a lot of, sort of installation-based work. And they're working with stricter types, languages a lot of the time. And I came up with the term free coding as I was sitting in the office because I do that. It's just, oh, how fast can we get something up and running and get something on the screen? So everybody, you're welcome to free coding. I'm coining that term. Tim, are you in?
No, no. I find that background very interesting. As somebody who studied video games myself, and I had to do something similar with C, where you kind of built a renderer, mine was absolutely atrocious. I have to say, I barely scraped by, but kind of having done a little bit of that kind of dirty hard work has again made me definitely appreciate like the JavaScript side of it. But I kind of want to link it back to something you said earlier where you kind of got a bit of a start like building tools, and I know that you still do this now. I'd love to kind of go through some of the stuff you've been making. But mm-hmm. You know, once you've done it the hard way, yeah, you're like, oh, how can I make this easier, and what steps can I make to kind of do that, which tends to be a good way to think, I think.
Yeah, I'd say starting with C sounds difficult, but I guess there's a lot of people I've met actually that still use C, and even in the creative coding space, there's still Cinder and frameworks like that. And to me, as in my JavaScript sort of way of thinking, it seems very tedious, but I think it's just whatever you learn on is what's comfortable. And when those people use JavaScript, it's probably painful and excruciating to have such a free and loose language. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, sometimes I forget that.
Yeah.
What you're used to. Tim, you mentioned some of the open source and tooling stuff that Matt's done, which I wouldn't mind going into as well, because there's a ton of it. I was just looking at your GitHub, Matt. I'm assuming that some of it now has got something to do with your teaching, because there's a lot of resources there.
Yeah, it's I have way too many GitHub repositories, for sure. I think I'm like past 500.
Is there such thing? Oh, okay, maybe.
Yeah, it's nearly up to 600, Matt. I just looked at your page.
Yeah, you know it's a problem when the emails for issues are coming in and I'm like, there's too many emails. I'm just going to put those aside. Don't need to worry about those.
I hadn't considered that. You must get a ton. God.
It's slowed down a little bit. I think maybe collectively people have noticed that I don't always answer issues. And there's actually like, that's a whole thing I could probably talk about, is like managing open source is actually really tedious and really tiring and exhausting. Especially once you start to have, like, once you start to have a lot of these kind of projects going in the ether, I guess, then you have to kind of juggle them, and you also have to juggle the rest of your life, and it becomes pretty exhausting. So, although I have a lot of open source tools, I'm not always keeping them 100%, up to date. But there are a couple that are worth highlighting that I am really actively maintaining and like actively checking on issues and trying to respond to things and fixing things. And yeah, I'd say one of them is definitely the Canvas sketch, which I could probably chat tons about, but yeah.
I mean, I would be very into getting into your workflow, I guess, in regard to that as well, because, you seem to be especially kind of pushing the envelope on, kind of building your ideal space and experimenting with new things and experimenting with new ideas to further upon that idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I kind of go in and out of these phases where sometimes I'm just in like a creation mode for something visual and I just spend days and days just like creating new visuals. And then sometimes I'm in like I'm not satisfied with my workflow and my process. It feels too slow. And And I think some of that stems from me watching other industries and seeing like a motion graphics designer. I think recently the thing that's made me like want to revamp my workflow is talking briefly to Beeple. I don't know if you know Beeple.
Yeah, Everyday 3D.
Yeah, he's doing really nice everyday Cinema 4D, I think, renders or something like that.
Yeah, I think I've used some of his stuff. It's really good.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, he does some freebies and stuff sometimes.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Mike
it's good Winkle. For bulking out a five-hour set, I can tell you that.
And he was just mentioning how basically as long as you have a workflow that allows you to create things in a matter of minutes, then you can still do those every days. You know, you can have some days where you devote more time to it, but you have some where you just like bang something out in 5 minutes. And I feel like with my own creative coding workflows, it's really hard to produce something in just 5 minutes. Like I would spend a few minutes just setting up some sort of environment for my code to live in. And then all of a sudden the timer would be done. I'd be like, just, it's a black screen or it's like an error in the console or something like that. So a lot of my recent desire for pushing the envelope, I guess, as you're saying, is trying to find some sort of workflow that works with me and like just something I'm still familiar with JavaScript and all these kind of platforms. But something that's a bit more visual maybe, or something where I can like really tweak it and remix it and reuse my code and sort of just continually build on it so that every day I have more code that I can use in future sketches and future artworks and things like that.
Was that the inspiration behind something like Canva Sketch, which is one of your open source?
Yeah, that's sort of, I guess, so Canva Sketch is like something, I guess, that I've been continually building out over the last maybe 3 years or something. Since I've started working with JavaScript, I built this tool called Budo, which was a development server so that you could very quickly just like type in a terminal command and write some JavaScript code and it would live reload the browser. Like really simple development server, which now there's things like Parcel, which are like super heavy duty and do basically the same thing but way better. But at the time when I was writing these tools, there wasn't a lot of options for that. And specifically, one of the things I wanted was support for NPM modules, because I found at the time that I was able to like take all my ideas, wrap them up into tiny little pieces of code, store them on NPM, and also hopefully kind of enter into this community of other people doing the same thing so that there'd be, in theory, hypothetically, thousands and thousands of creative coders around the world contributing to this kind of like shared knowledge base. And then eventually, in a ideal hypothetical situation, you'd be able to just like pick and choose like little modules of creative coding things like this kind of shader, or this kind of graphical thing, or this kind of cool effect, and just assemble things together. And it sort of worked with NPM, because a lot of the prints that I make and a lot of the work I'm doing, a lot of the exhibitions, I would probably on average in every image that I create or every installation that I create, I'd probably use like 50 different modules from NPM or maybe more. And each of those modules would probably use different modules. So in total, I'm using like, I don't know, 1,000 dependencies for each image that I'm creating. So there's definitely this element of reuse. And that's kind of what's been stemming all these tools, like originally Budo and now more recently Canva Sketch, which is basically just me trying to make this more accessible to other people to use the same tools and same workflow that I'm using.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a lot of rambling. I've actually, basically, I don't know where.
It's really, really interesting to me. There's a lot to be said about creating your own tools, because this gives you the space to do that a lot more than some other mediums that I work with, and that's something that I really am into. Something I really appreciate, because I have actually dug into your Canva Sketch util. Like you've got a ton of good stuff in there. Like some amazing sort of math functions and color functions and things that I've been thinking about for ages. And then I'm like, I could do this a ton of ways. And just seeing someone else sort of create something quite similar is very inspirational. So
what would
I
you say is your number one used tool?
The
most important abstraction, just out of curiosity.
So the thing I use the most, oh, there's a lot of things, but one of the things I use the most is the like exporting feature. So as I'm coding, if I see some, because my process is really like, I just start coding and then I look at the image and I'm like, nah, it's not good enough. And I just keep adding more code and more tweaks. And eventually it starts to be like in a place where I'm really happy with it. And with Canvas Sketch, I can just hit a keystroke to export a PNG file. And it's as simple on a browser as now. It's just like right-clicking the canvas and clicking Save As. But what I've done with my tools is that when I hit a keystroke, it saves a commit and saves like a hash along with the file name and along with some other metadata like the random seed. And so that every single time I get an export, I'm able to go back to that like some years later maybe and reproduce the same exact output. And so that actually happens a lot now where a client will see something that I posted on Instagram from like a year ago. And they're like, hey, can you reprint this exact image at a different size? And without this kind of export tool, I wouldn't really be able to do that. I'd have to say like, oh, I made that 2 years ago and I didn't save the code for it, or that exact permutation of randomness, or that exact, you know, parametric setup. So I'd say the exporting, it's not even just PNGs, but like MP4 files as well. It's just a single keystroke, which is really hard actually with JavaScript. Yeah.
Yeah. That's sick.
I do remember the old days of trying to save it out base64 and then the browser will crash. Oh, loving it.
Yeah. Oh, and one other thing I guess worth mentioning now that I'm just on the page of just like tool promotion, I guess. But one of the other things with this export that's really important for my workflow is that every single time I hit the keystroke, I get a print asset. So I'm not just getting like a canvas image that's like, you know, a 1080p image or something like that I would share on Instagram, but it's an image that I would be able to send to a print studio to have it printed, or I could use it in my own production to like screen print it or something like, or Rizo printing or whatever. I don't know how to.
I do want to ask about the whole printing. Like, I think you're probably one of the primary people in the world of generative art, kind of doing the full from start to finish, you know, the code and then kind of getting it into a physical medium and then doing exhibitions and things like that. How did that unfold, out of curiosity? And then I'd love to hear about your printing process and kind of how you narrowed it down to what you do.
Yeah, I guess it sort of started when, as my tool started to get better, I was able to export these higher resolution images and the browser was able to like cope with it, which I think is also something that's been happening in the last couple of years, maybe in parallel. Behind the scenes, Chrome, I think, has just been like improving their way of saving PNGs or something, because it's, as you said, it used to crash like maybe 5 years ago or something. If you tried to save a print resolution PNG from JavaScript, sometimes it would crash or it would just like break out or whatever. But yeah, as the tool seemed to just improve, and as my code and my workflow seemed to improve, I started to get images and started to get graphics from my algorithms that people were quite often saying, can I have a print of this? And usually I would just have to be like, no, sorry. And then and then eventually I was like, yeah, I should start printing these because there's a lot of people asking for them. And I went through a process of, it was kind of a long process of like going to different print studios and trying different papers, trying different like things, trying different things in the code as well. So I had a bunch of tests where I would just like take an image and I would try and get economical about it. So I'd be like, should this image have noise or should it have like a pure black or like a not such a pure black, but like a 90% black? And I would take, you know, 5 or 6 outputs and I'd cut them up in Photoshop, put them on a single page, and then I'd have that printed really large. And I'd get that like print really large because the printing kind of costs a lot of money from most studios. And then
you send
I'd
it
get
to,
the print.
To a print shop?
Yeah, it would just be like a horrible test print. Like it would just look awful. But I would be able to look at it and I'd be like, oh, this little sample from my code actually produces this output on paper. When it looks up close, because I was so new to this world of print and printmaking that I was really just like feeling around blindly. But yeah, it sort of evolved organically, as I guess most of my work does. Yeah. And then I just eventually started selling it through like a service that's in London. They're like a print studio, and they manage the shipping and things. And then for specifically like bespoke art, like signed, and for things like limited edition or single edition for silkscreen prints and things like that, I have to manage the shipping and all that myself, which is now I'm kind of used to the packaging and all that.
Damn, the silkscreens. How long does that take?
Well, the silkscreens, there's two ways of doing it. One is doing it yourself, which is a little costly and very time consuming. It took me a day to make a series of like, I think I ended up with like 12 prints that I was happy with. And they were larger than, they were around A3 size. So they were fairly, they were a decent size. And they were two color prints. So I had to build two different screen meshes, but it took me like a whole day. Yeah, because you build like, you have two different layer masks. Right. And so you build like one screen for one color and then another screen for another color. And then you can like just push the ink through one screen and then you let it dry for a bit. And then you push the other ink through the other screen. And when the ink combines on the page, it makes this like nice blend mode kind of thing that you can't achieve with most printers.
Physical blend mode.
Yeah. But yeah, it took me like a day. And I asked them afterwards, I'm like, oh my God, like, does it always take a day to make just 12 prints? Because I was so new to this world of like analog printing. And they're like, oh, once you get good at it, it's a lot faster. But still, it's really time consuming. So that's one way of doing it. The other way of doing it is to just send the prints to a screen printer and they will screen print it for you. But it costs obviously a lot more money.
That sounds nice.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Every time.
But if you're interested in doing screen prints, it's really fun. Like, it's such a fun thing. It's like you should ask for that as like a gift next time for like birthday or Christmas or something like that, because you can do a workshop in many cities. There's places where they'll do like a 1-day workshop, and it's just so much fun. It's just like you get really messy and you, like at the end of it, you've got like this like beautifully printed output. That's like something that you push the ink through on your own hands, which is really good, I think, for creative coders, because you don't often get away from the computer when you're creating the art. But doing something like a screen print really forces you to think in like physical and analog space.
Yeah, it's definitely like broadening the horizons there.
Yeah, I'm kind of speechless because I'm thinking, can I go and just do some screen printing now? And just having a Google, I'm just seeing if there's anything close to me. Wow, that sounds brilliant. I love physical stuff like that. Ah, I'm in.
Yeah, Ruth, you're doing a lot of like hardware stuff, right? Electronics.
So I guess the sort of group I'm in, our little collective, the others do quite a lot of hardware. I've done a bit of wearables. I went through a sort of phase of doing wearables because I'm also quite an avid sewer, as me and Tim probably already discussed.
That's it. I've got the programmatic sewing machine as well.
Ooh, yeah. That sounds really cool, actually.
Yeah. But actually, I haven't done any hardware for ages because it's sort of that idea that you have a go, you see how it's done, you find that it's time-consuming, and you don't regret doing it. It's really informative and very like educational for your own creative process. But now I just tend to buy MIDI controllers. They're like pre-built. That I know that's what I want. Like, that's what I do. There's a lot of stuff I suppose to be talked about around things like LEDs and lights and things like that, which I don't think I will ever fully step away from, because that's still in the same realm as all projectors and things like that. But I think at the moment, my process is very software-based. I did a very similar thing to you a couple of years ago, where building the tools became part of the process. And that's pretty much been a big focus of mine for the past couple of years, which is building some sort of tool to make it easier to be creative. So that you can just go in, you can, it's never 5 minutes, but you want it to be that 5 minutes of putting something on the screen, curating it, and feeling like, yes, I'm satisfied now. I satisfied that creative gap I have, which I have daily. But yeah, hard drives, brilliant, amazing. You yourself, if we're talking about hard drive, done quite a lot very recently in the realms of things like light installations.
Yeah, I've been getting into it in the last couple of years because I think it's just this, like, I don't know, overarching desire to get away from my computer every once in a while, because before this, yeah, I would just be always coding and always in software. And the more I explore analog, the more I explore things like prints, the more I'm like, ooh, this is like a whole day where I'm making art still and I'm making things, but I'm not relying just on code and relying just on the computer. So I guess, yeah, LEDs and like light installations and interactive installations is sort of just a continuation of that. And I'm still fairly new to it all. It's been just probably 2 or 3 years maybe since I've gotten into this kind of space. And of course, I'm not trained as like a engineer, like an electrical or mechanical engineer of any kind. And so a lot of it's just, as with my code, it's just kind of hacking things together and seeing what works and trying not to set anything on fire. but so in the, like, it started, I guess, with a light festival in Toronto. And actually I had my friend Jean-Michel Gariepi in Toronto. He's a electrical engineer, or at least he's trained in mechanical engineer. And he's been, like, you know, properly engineered, like professional engineer kind of thing or whatever. Actually, I could be butchering all the terms. I don't know what the terms are for engineering. But point is, I had him helping me with the actual electrical side of things to make sure I did not set anything on fire. But that project was Lumos. I'm sort of rambling here. Let me just get the date.
No, no.
The difficult thing with, like, doing a lot of these things is you start to forget which day, which year you do certain projects.
Yeah, if I didn't write them down, I would just forget that I'd done them sometimes.
Yeah.
Somebody would be like, that export button. Oh, you did the thing. Yeah. I'd be like, oh, yeah, I did. Oh, that was cool.
It is kind of funny how it creeps up on you a little bit, you know. I'll get an email every now and then, like, how do you have time to do all this stuff? And I foolishly don't have dates on my website, so it looks like I've just had one insanely productive year to anybody watching, but, you know, it's 8 years of work sitting there.
I feel like that's a good tactic, Tim. Because I always do things by a date, and I'm like, maybe I should just remove them, just stick everything together. Yeah.
Anyway, so
sorry, I got a bit sidetracked there, but I was saying, I was basically circling back to this light installation that I worked on in Canada, and it was a physical sculpture. It was like a sort of a throwback to like a warming hut in Canadian, like, hiking times, I guess, like old school hikes.
A warming hut?
Yeah, so in Canada, if you're, let's say, this is like maybe more historical and maybe in the past, not so much anymore, but if you're hiking on like a mountain, in a very cold mountain, then occasionally there'd be these little huts that are just set throughout the mountain, and usually they'd be empty, and you just go in and like light a little fire, like just maybe they'd have like a little oven or something like that. And it would be sort of this like nice... Yeah, it's this nice little, like, delightful, like, beacon of hope if you're in the middle of a blizzard in Canada or a mountain or something.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and we sort of wanted to, create something like that, but like a bit more futuristic, I guess, with light and really inspired by artists like James Turrell, who's an amazing light artist. And so it was me, the engineer Jean-Michel, and then Stephen Monchin, who's a designer in Toronto right now, from France. And the three of us, we got together and we made this like sculpture. It was what we would call a kinetic light sculpture, I guess you could say, because as you would walk in front of the sculpture, it would change and it would detect your body heat and change from a cold blue light to like a warmer red hue and sort of capture some of the heat that is within you, I guess you could say, metaphorically. But yeah, the three of us sort of didn't really know exactly what we were doing when we got into this, and this was a couple of years ago, to be totally honest with you, but we really put our heads together, and we ended up doing really well on it. Like, it came out perfectly as we hoped it would. And amazingly, the thing,
it, I don't it believe did. It. That never happened.
No, it was crazy. Like, we spent, I would say, 3 months like stressing over the fact that this thing is not going to work. And we ended up doing electronics and like learning a lot of new things. And eventually we sort of got it all in a place where it was weatherproofed and it was, you know, the light was reacting in real time. Everything worked really well. Everything was great. And the whole project for like 4 months in the Canadian winter, the installation was perfect. Like, it didn't break down. It didn't like die or anything. The code was fine. It just kept running every single day, all day. Hold on. There's more. This is all, it was all good. And then there's the but. There's a couple issues.
Yeah.
So the second last day, somebody had kicked in the glass that was like enclosing the thing. So it broke. That was one issue, but then there was an issue somewhere in the code. this is like a small detail that most people probably wouldn't notice, except, you know, the coder who actually works on the code. But there was an issue somewhere in my code that after it would run for like 5 days straight, it would start to slow down. I think it was a memory leak or something. But so in theory, it was all running fine, but to me, it looked slower. And so it's definitely like, it wasn't, you know, really perfect or anything like that. But overall it was a really, really fun project to work on. And like, we learned a lot and we were surprised that it ran as well as it did.
I always kind of give that advice for people like looking to do coding in conferences or workshops or anything like that, to kind of, I mean, exactly like in your instance, kind of not reveal how you think everything is supposed to be going. You know, if something goes like slightly wrong or slightly different, nobody really knows better if it's, you know, if you're showing it to them for the first time. It's a little confidence trick I use anyway.
It surprised me it took 5 days to slow down. I still think that's an incredible achievement compared to some of the stuff that mine will slow down in like 5 minutes and I'll be there for the next sort of couple of hours just going, where?
That's amazing. Is there a website or something we can look at that?
Yeah, it's lumos-project.xyz.
Perfect.
And this was sort of where, yeah, I guess this is where I started getting into this sort of work. I showed this and had this shown in for like the 4 or 5 months that it was running in Ontario Place Park in Toronto. And then since then, I've been just trying to do more installation light art like this. Obviously now that, because I'm not like I said earlier, because I'm not really an engineer in the electrical sense, I'm trying to collaborate more with people that are able to do this sort of stuff without it, you know, slowing down or breaking or anything like that, because that's something I'm obviously concerned about. But yeah, it's something I'm wanting to do more of, but it just takes a lot of time and
enough time in the day. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is funny kind of striking the balance between all of these things, really, you know, the tools. You can spend so much time on it and then you're like, wait, I want to actually make something here. I feel like you strike a pretty good balance, it sounds like, I guess one part trying something new each time, one part kind of maintaining and making sure you can do things faster and more efficiently, and three, just kind of getting stuff out there.
Thanks.
Good balance. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I'm always just trying new things and then very quickly getting bored of something and trying new things. And it's I don't know if you've seen that comic where it's like, oh, I'm going to try a new side project. And then you see like the half finished villages like just scattered throughout the land. Yeah.
Yeah. It happens, but yeah, I can relate.
I think as a brief final question, unless we have any more potentially final question.
Potential final question.
What would be your advice then for people kind of just starting out or say for your students?
So I guess the the first advice I'd say is just to start small, start simple. A lot of the people that I look up to, a lot of the artists, a lot of the, especially coders and artists like Zach Lieberman, they have been working on it for many, many, many years. And they were working on it like on a daily basis. And so when I just started off, I was kind of a bit sad that I wasn't able to create the kind of work they're doing. But I think it's just a lot of small practicing and just like daily iteration or weekly iteration, because maybe every single day is a bit too much for many people. And yeah, just starting small. I think something like the site you guys have, Generative Artistry, with like the actual tutorials is perfect. It's something I give to all of my students. I'm like, just go through these. They're going to get you started right away. Because it's the kind of thing that you start simple and then you create something and then it's exciting. And if you just continue doing that, it kind of just, you know, keeps building up and until you create something more and more cool. I don't know. I guess start small. That's like kind of the advice that everyone gives, but
no, that's fantastic advice.
Yeah. I
experience exactly the same thing, you know, that is in a funny way why I try and keep every single thing that I've made on my website, or the majority, to kind of show, if you scroll right back to the start, you can kind of see how small things were originally.
Yeah, I was just about to reiterate that, because when you're doing these small steps, which is exactly how you should do it, I think, you forget how much progress you have made. And then you can look back over a longer period of time from where you were to where you are now. And that's when you really see the progress and you're much, much happier. But doing small bits every day, for sure. Or, you know, smaller bits, more velocity. What are you working on right now, Matt?
So I'm working actually on a game. We're just in early stages right now of like designing the game and sort of prototyping it and getting the illustration and the art. And right now it's just very early stages. It's with NFB, which is the National Film Board of Canada. And hopefully if all goes well, we'll just continue building this out. Right now, just because it's so early, we don't know yet where, you know, it'll end up going. But if you just keep an eye on my account, I think I'll be starting to talk about it in the next couple months. But it's something that's been under wraps for probably like 5 months now, and it's just starting to come out. That's one thing. And then other than that, just trying to have some clear space for teaching, and just trying to eventually get back to doing prints. But in the meantime, I'm also like just, you know, starting side projects every week, so of course busy with that. yeah, a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to wrap it up with just like where to find you, where to see, where to buy, where to everything.
Yeah, thanks Tim. we can do that in unison next time.
No, I generally try not to do like too much self promo of my shop. I think that's
too
actually
modest,
my
too modest.
I think it's a failure on my point, my part here. Like I see a lot of artists that are able to promote on a daily basis, sometimes the same art that they've already created. And for some reason I have a hard time just like spamming people with the same thing that they might have already seen before. But if anyone wants to buy a print, they can go to shop.mattdesel.com.
All right, we got one.
I'm gonna do like a promo roundup to this episode. Just give all the listeners all your details for you.
That, you know, you increase the music speed. We got to have that radio technique, you know. Bye, bye, bye. The opposite of what you want.
I think you probably only get that in the States, Tim. I think in the UK, it'll probably be like, if you want to. You can.
I don't know if you've seen the medical ads here where they like side effects may include.
Oh yeah, and then it's speed everything up.
complete loss of money because.
we'll do a side effect as well. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, thank you. I feel this has been fantastic. It's been fantastic having you and talking. We haven't met yet. I'd love to get it in there one day.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys are going to be around any of the, like, I.O. or something like that. I'm actually going to be in I.O. this year, which is an amazing conference.
I.O. is not...
We gotta spell it out.
There's two, I think. There's another. There's like Google I.O. But the one I'm talking about is EYEO. And it's
that one.
I think it's one of my favorite like creative coding related festivals that I've ever been to.
It looks amazing.
Yeah, it's in the States.
We should go, Tim.
Right. Yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah. I've been keeping my eye on it for the past couple of years and it does look amazing.
I think my old housemate, Justin Windle, opened up for one time. Gotta get out there. All right, should we hit the not record?